From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The right answer is a balanced budget with broader reforms.
Well, what if you can get neither of those?
We'll get things done.
A year ago, he was clear that what he wanted to do was a tax hike without reforms, starting back to 5% for the income tax and go up from there.
He said up or down. Didn't he? He said up or down. He said a starting point and then you go up or down from there.
Okay.
You keep saying the other one way, but he said something different than what you said.
Income tax hike without reforms.
Is your administration okay with 4.75 because that's been reported?
A year ago, he said he wanted to do an income tax hike without reforms.
And spending cuts.
And without reforms. And now he's not talking about that.
I look forward to all the facts coming out in this case. I have full confidence in my legal team. Full confidence in the good people of this community, and I'm confident that in the end, justice will prevail.
That's the former Republican Congressman Aaron Schock. He was in federal court this week. He faces charges for misuse of campaign funds. We'll get an update on his case. Also, Governor Bruce Rauner, you heard him talking to reporters. It appears more likely that we'll get to January 1st without a new state budget. A temporary spending plan comes to an end at the end of this month. We'll talk about all that and more today on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also in our State House Bureau, Brian Mackey, State House reporter for Illinois Public Radio. And Doug Finke, State House reporter for Gatehouse Media. Doug, good to have you back on again.
Glad to be here.
Brian and Doug, I'm going to throw it to you first. It seems, even Las Vegas would not give us odds on Illinois getting a budget at this point. Things are not looking too positive.
No. In a summation, the state, there's about a week left before the Christmas holiday. Even if they were to reach agreement on something next week, which I believe is impossible, it would be next to impossible to get enough lawmakers back in town during the holiday season to actually vote on something. So I think it's a fair bet that the state's going to begin the new year with the stopgap spending authority lapsing.
And remember last year, Governor Rauner spent part of the holidays in Spain and Morocco. We didn't know that, actually, until he got back. He wouldn't say where he went, or his staff wouldn't say where he went. But, Doug's right. A lot of people have travel plans, and as it just ticks down to the holidays, it's seeming less and less likely that we're going to get any sort of a Christmas gift from the leadership of Illinois.
Brian, it sounded as though the governor was a little perturbed with talking with reporters there. Can you give us some insight on what we heard at the start of the show? What was being asked about there and what he had to say?
Well, it's important, I think, to understand that, take a step back and realize that Governor Rauner is one of the most disciplined politicians. That's the sort of positive way to say it. He's also very rote. He has a very strict set of talking points that he has presumably strategized beforehand. And kind of no matter what question he gets asked, he's going to steer the conversation back to what he wants to say. And lately for most of his administration, his talking points have focused on attacking House Speaker Michael Madigan, the Democratic leader of the Illinois House, and specifically this statement that Speaker Madigan made about a year ago, in which he said he was asked at a City Club speech in Chicago, what do you think needs to happen to the state income tax hike? And sort of tongue-in-cheek, he said, you could take it to where it was and go up or down from there, which is 5%. I'm paraphrasing. It's not a direct quote. And the Republicans since then have seized on that and said, Mike Madigan wants to raise your taxes to 5% and go up from there. And Bernie Schoenberg, Doug's colleague at the State Journal Register, said, you keep saying that, Governor, but that's not actually what the House Speaker said. So we were just trying to get him to say something other than his normal talking points to give us some insight about where things really are in state government, because we keep getting the same things over and over again, and they are at variance with what the Democrats are telling us. And it's just very difficult to resolve these seemingly contradictory statements.
Well, and it's not only a matter of getting him off his talking points. It's a matter of accuracy. Madigan said, the way I interpreted it when I heard it was, let's use the 5% personal tax income tax rate that was in effect before most of the temporary income tax hike expired. Go back to that rate, use that as a starting point for negotiations. And it was, yes, you could go higher, or at the same time, you could go lower, depending on what your beliefs are. But, I mean, the point is, in this kind of situation, at least be accurate about what people are saying, because it doesn't advance the cause when things are misrepresented.
And Bernie specifically asked the governor, there have been reports that the Rauner administration, who has said, it's important, this is another important point, both Democrats and Republicans agree we will probably need a tax hike, or we will need a tax hike eventually. It's just how much it is and who goes first saying that takes the politically unpopular step of saying that. And there has been reporting that the Rauner administration would agree to a, what was it, 4.75, 4.85%, something along those lines.
Right.
And he was asked about that, and you can hear there's a pause. And the governor immediately goes back to his message, which House Speaker Madigan said XYZ.
Yeah, and the thing that I find vexing is that during a political campaign, you expect candidates to lie, to misrepresent, to be totally deceitful. That's the way the game is played these days, unfortunately. But once someone is in office, you expect them to stop campaigning at least long enough to do the job for which they were elected. And unfortunately, in the case of the governor, he doesn't seem to be able to do that. Yeah, he totally misrepresented what Madigan said, because it suits his political purposes. And it strikes me to keep poisoning the well is not very smart if you're serious about getting anything done. The reason I say that is because everybody who's looked at the situation realizes you can't cut your way out of a budget hole as deep as this. You'd have to, like, do away with half of the general fund spending. We could say next year, okay, no money for K-12. That'll help us balance our budget. That's not going to happen. You need new revenue. And so for the governor and his minions to go around vilifying people for suggesting that maybe we might need to raise taxes strikes me as being either they don't really want to solve the problem, they're hoping the state will crash and burn so that they can impose whatever ideas are floating around in their heads, or they don't appreciate how you get things done on the legislative level. Compromise requires a certain amount of trust. And in the past, when the income tax was enacted, when it was raised in the past, when higher rates were continued in the past, it was always a bipartisan effort. The governors were Republican, and the reason it was done that way was so that it would not become an issue that one party would bang the other party over the head in the campaign season, because everybody recognized we need to do this, and let's try and make it as easy as possible on ourselves.
Well, the governor has talked about he's open to revenue, right? He has said that, at least. I don't know if he's ever given a number.
Why does he bash Madigan as tax hike Mike? Why does he fund all of this vitriolic rhetoric against Democrats up and down the line? I mean,
his ultimate goal is ousting Madigan as Speaker and eventually, you know, remaking Illinois into a more Republican state. I mean, I think that's what goes to
points.
He's playing a longer game than he acknowledges.
Right. And in the meantime, people who are dependent on state services are suffering. And so is the fictional goal of removing Madigan from office. I mean, 100 years from now, Mike Madigan probably won't be the Speaker. But the kind of damage that's being done to the state right now is going to take a long time to repair.
Well, let me ask about the negotiations themselves, what had been going on, at least behind closed doors. It seemed as though, you heard it from at least a few spokespeople, that there was progress they felt being made. Do we know for sure if they're making progress in a certain area, or are they closer than maybe we might think? Anybody, have any insight on that?
I can only speak for myself, and there may be reporters out there who have better sources of information. But in my own instance, when I've talked to people, you get a certain amount of spin based on what they want you to believe is coming out of these meetings. So somebody will say on one side they're making progress, they're inching towards agreements on things like workers' compensation and other issues that the governor says are important. You can talk to somebody else, no, they're going absolutely nowhere, and they're deadlocked. And obviously these meetings are not being conducted in public, and there's no representative of the media sitting in on these things. So we have to rely on what the people who are participating say, and they have their own agendas to promote.
And right now there is no meeting taking place whatsoever as far as at least the top leaders go, and it really does take those folks to get together. You know, all these other things can be worked out, but it needs agreement from Madigan, from Rauner, from Cullerton, Durkin, Redonio. It needs those folks to get together and say, yes, we're on board. Now we'll let the people who are in the legislature that we assign to these issues work out some of the details. We have not gotten to that point.
That was kind of the practice in the past. The governor and the leaders would set out the broad parameters. They give them to these working groups. They were called budgeteers back in my day. And the budgeteers would go over and do like the fine print, the details, come back to the leaders. The leaders would sign off and the legislation would pass. And that's the way it was done. But again, I'm an old curmudgeon. When I was an active reporter, we didn't have to deal with social media trolls the way you do now.
I also don't want to... Go ahead, Doug.
Well, I was just going to say the important thing, which Charlie mentioned, is that even if these working groups can work out some kind of compromise, that is not the thing that goes before the rank-and-file lawmakers until the leaders sign off on it. So ultimately... the governor and the four leaders are still going to have to get together at some point in a room and say, yes, we agree that we're going to move these things. We're going to work out the votes to get them passed. And that is not happening at this point.
Now, we're heading to...
I think there's...
We're heading toward the end of the year. I don't want to scare people with that because we've been there before without a budget in place. Can somebody give an idea of what is likely to happen January 1, 2, 3, or whatever if there is no budget? Things will continue because there are many court orders still in place, right, that will pay some things that that we've already seen having to be paid by the state.
Yeah, so state workers are going to continue to get paid. Because that's a local trial, a couple of local trial court decisions have made that. So unless somebody appeals that decision, that's going to continue to happen. There are a lot of federal court orders requiring payments for people in the Medicaid program, which is Illinois' the federal government's program of health care for the poor, elderly, disabled people. And so a lot of spending is going on, which is one of the reasons why our deficit is growing so tremendously this year. So it's probably not going to be a huge immediate crisis on January 1st, but it's worth remembering that when there was a lot of pressure to get that stopgap budget done last summer because things were really coming to a head with a lot of state vendors, businesses, private enterprise, for-profit companies that provide food for Illinois prisoners, and they provide power and water to our state parks and facilities like that. They were really putting pressure on. Some of them were threatening to pull the plug. Some of them had pulled the plug. There were a couple of state parks that were closed for a little while. And the state government had really been scrambling. And there was the thought was last summer that they were kind of coming to the end of what they could do. And so one imagines that the Illinois will continue having that pressure build up, perhaps even more quickly now. We have just destroyed any goodwill. It's a wonder to me that so many companies are still willing to provide services to the state of Illinois, given how difficult it is to get payment out of the state. And when you're talking about keeping prisoners fed, I mean, that's a huge public safety issue. I mean, if I read something in a quote in a story once that said, you know, if the hot dog's flavoring is off, prisoners might think they're getting poison, and then you're looking at a potential riot. So, I mean, this is a very serious problem that we're heading toward. No, it might not appear to be an immediate disaster, but things could come to a head sooner than later.
And part of the difficulty for the comptroller is that, yeah, there are these court orders. There is funding in place for K-12 for the full fiscal year of FY17. There are consent decrees. There are continuing appropriations for pensions, for debt service. But all that means is that the authority is there to spend the money. The question is, will the money be there? And we're pushing $11 billion in bill backlog, bills that are there for which the comptroller doesn't have the cash to pay at the moment. So this juggling is going to go on, and the people who don't have an appropriation are really going to be hurting.
Well, maybe the Russians can get involved. We learned this week that the Illinois Republican Party, at least a high-ranking official there, saying that their information was hacked by Russians. They were alerted to that, and this was before the election, you know, several weeks before the election, I believe. What have we heard? Anything more on that? Anybody have any knowledge of any other activity that's being looked at?
No, I mean, I think we've seen nationally that the Republicans' email hacks, while they happened, were not really weaponized, so to speak, in this election. The federal government is, of course, saying that we all know that the Democratic emails were leaked. The federal government says they have strong evidence that that was Russia's military intelligence agency's government that was behind that. But there, we've also, as you pointed out, Sean, gotten word that the Republicans were also hacked, including in Illinois, but that was not part of the leak. And it's also important to note that Illinois is one of the handful of states that we, at least that we know of, that had a voting part of our elections process was somewhat targeted. I think the identities of several thousand voters were taken. It's not as though they hacked into the voting machines or anything like that. But Illinois' election system was targeted by hackers earlier this year as well.
Charlie, we were told before the election by state election officials, you know, don't worry, there's no problems with the state system. Everybody, you know, Donald Trump was talking a lot about the system is rigged and all of that, and they were really downplaying that quite a bit. Looking back on this now and the information that's come out, does it raise concerns that maybe the system isn't as airtight as it should be?
I think the concerns aren't about what happens at the voting booth. For example, in Illinois, we don't really have a centralized election. We have independent election authorities. I think there's something like 115 of them. There's one in every county, every county clerk, plus there are certain, for example, Chicago has its own elections commission. They do it all on the ground themselves, and then ultimately they send the numbers to the State Board of Elections for certification. The targeting that went on was more trying to influence the debate in the campaign.
Emails and things.
Yeah, hacking the emails, release ones that are going to be embarrassing to one candidate or the other. The narrative seems to be that
Not so
Putin,
much the other, I would say. Just one candidate in particular.
Well, but I was going to say
Hillary Clinton, yeah.
They have this information. They could use it either way. There's probably embarrassing stuff they have about the Republicans. But the decision was made to feed the stuff to WikiLeaks that is embarrassing to Clinton, and this supposition is that Putin favored Trump, and so he was allowing these leaks to go out to damage Clinton. But in terms of what happened on voting day, some hacker suddenly giving 10,000 votes to Hillary Clinton that she wouldn't have had otherwise, no, that doesn't happen.
Well, he was a rising star in the Republican Party. In fact, been a state lawmaker at one point. He'd been rumored at one point to possibly run for governor or some other office. He became a congressman. We're talking about Aaron Schock of Peoria. And now he's, of course, out of office. And he was back in Springfield this week, federal court, where he faces federal charges. Brian, I know you went down to his arraignment. Can you talk about the charges a little bit and what's next in this case?
Yeah, the charges are pretty extensive. I believe there are 24 counts in total. And basically, the bottom line is that he is accused of defrauding the government, his campaign, political fundraising committees, and even his constituents out of more than $100,000. He is alleged to have spent this money on private airplane travel. He didn't apparently like flying commercials, so he would book private jets. Stereo equipment, $2,000 worth of stereo equipment for a residence of his. Tickets to sporting events, which he wouldn't even necessarily attend. Some of them he would allegedly buy tickets to the Super Bowl and then turn around and resell them for a profit. So that those are the basic outline of the charges against him.
And Doug, I look back, I called him a rising star. I mean, I think that this fellow, he was smart. There's no doubt about that. So it was Jesse Jackson Jr. I mean, and he wound up going to prison for campaign fund misuse. Aaron Schock certainly seemed to have a bright career in politics ahead of him. And, you know, being from Central Illinois, certainly a lot of folks got to know him. And I think he was probably the type of guy that could have gone a long way. It still, to me, is a little bit shocking to see some of the charges against him that somebody that had that bright of a future would let themselves get taken down this way.
You're talking to the wrong person about that, because it shocks me whenever I hear about a politician who's gotten into legal trouble for this sort of activity, because you know, the history is there, and it's a long and unfortunate history in Illinois of politicians doing nefarious things and getting caught and prosecuted and ending up in jail. And so why anybody risks doing that is baffling to me.
And this is a guy that started out, I think was he a teenager? He was maybe 20 years old. He was on the school board. He was elected in Peoria, which is a pretty big school board. And
then he beat a Democratic incumbent for a seat in the Illinois House.
So he's going to be going to trial, it does appear, in the next year, maybe early sometime in the next year. Brian, is there anything, you followed the courts quite a bit, is there anything out of this case that really stands out to you that the public should be watching?
Well, you said early next year, it's probably, they did officially set a court date for February with the pretty clear expectation that it's going to be delayed because of the volume of evidence. Apparently, the government says they talked to 100 witnesses here, including Schock's own mother, father, sister, and brother. And one of the interesting things that came up during the, so because he's free while his trial is progressing, apparently he is spending at least a lot of his time in Los Angeles, where he's got a job as a consultant for the travel industry. It was a little vague how his team described it. But one of the things that came up is that one of the conditions of his release is that he's not supposed to talk to witnesses about the case. That includes his own family. The holidays are coming up. And so there was a little bit of back and forth between the attorneys for Schock and the government about, you know, can he talk to his mom and dad at the holidays? I mean, this is obviously a very important thing in his life. He's still a relatively young man. I think he's, what, 30, 35?
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting aspect, I think, is that he is apparently going to be able to continue spending money out of his campaign funds. Right now, there's only about $379,000 in them, but Schock was known as a great fundraiser. Last year, he had given his law firm, the one that's representing him now, after he left office, $1.5 million. So a lot of people who at one time thought they might have been contributing to Schock and the bright young future of the Republican Party are now instead paying for his legal defense. I do think it's also important to say that he and his team say that any mistakes made while he was in Congress were administrative errors. And he says that when all the facts come out, he's confident that he will be, I guess he says, justice will prevail.
Well, before time does slip away, we got a couple of minutes here. Doug, you wrote about that. Wrote about this week that the what's been called a lockbox amendment, which was approved overwhelmingly by voters, basically said that money that's been earmarked for transportation purposes has to be spent on transportation purposes. You reported on the fact that they're still trying to really figure out what the implications of this are. Can you give us maybe some of the question marks that that still are out there?
Yeah, there's a couple of unresolved issues. Number one, and possibly the biggest potential impact on the state budget, is that Illinois applies a sales tax on gasoline purchases on top of the motor fuel tax. That money goes in the state's general fund to pay for general state services. So the question is, could somebody potentially go to court and sue and say that, no, that money ought to be diverted to transportation projects and not to the general fund. There's also a case that the Department of Natural Resources gets $2 for every license renewal that's used for park maintenance and just general park operations. So is that something that could potentially be in jeopardy? And a third thing that at least the Secretary of State's office said that they're confident it is okay, but nonetheless, questions were raised about these charity license plates. Right now, when you buy one of those plates, a small portion of the proceeds goes to support a charity. Could someone, again, sue and say that, no, that money really ought to be going to transportation projects instead? At this point, what we get from people is a lot of, well, we're looking into it. So,
and just about a minute left or so here. Charlie, you wrote about this proposal before voters cast votes on it, and some of these are some of these issues that you raised about it as well.
Yeah, and they were the very same issues that probably should have been explored more thoroughly before folks voted on this thing. Another aspect of it, a lot of cities, not Springfield, but Chicago, make you buy a vehicle sticker for your car. Now, I suppose you could figure out a way to keep your books so that it looks like the money raised by those vehicle stickers is only used to pay for traffic patrols or to repave roads, something like that. But it's going to be a hairy situation for the locals. And on the flip side, right now, no road fund related money goes to pay for any courts. Roughly two-thirds of the court cases that are initiated every year in the circuit courts involve driving offenses. So you could argue, well, maybe some of this money raised by the road fund, vehicle license plates, driver's license, and so on, can be used to help support the courts. So it could go the other way against the people who are thinking asphalt and concrete.
All right, time now for our notes from the field. Brian Mackey, we'll start with you.
Yeah, the Illinois Department of Corrections invited reporters in this week to announce that they had pretty much completed mental health training for almost 13,000 of its employees and contractors, everyone from prison guards to administrative staff to nurses. This is part of a legal settlement in which the DOC had agreed to improve its handling of inmates with mental illness. They estimate that at least one in four inmates has some sort of mental health problem. Sounds good on the surface, but Alan Mills, who's one of the lawyers who had sued the Department of Corrections over this, says while prison leadership is committed to change, he's concerned that the rank and file, the guards, are not necessarily buying in. They thought the training was maybe a little too touchy-feely and are disregarding it. So it's something to keep an eye on. Illinois Department of Corrections is under a lot of pressure under this legal settlement to improve its treatment of inmates with mental illness.
Charlie?
Well, the Chicago Tribune did an interesting investigation into the instant lottery games, the scratch-off tickets. And what their investigation found is that roughly 40% of the time, the grand prizes were not ever awarded because I guess nobody bought the winning ticket. And sometimes the games were ended before any winners bought a winning ticket. And so the lawmakers are calling for an investigation, and in my mind, the question is, well, if you're going to sell lottery tickets and you want to really maximize your profits, as the private company overseeing this probably does, one way to do it would be to not sell or not make available any tickets with the winning number on it.
All right, that's going to wrap up today's show. Members of our broadcast include Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Doug Finke. You can get a podcast of the show at nprillinois.org and find us on NPR One. Look for State Week. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.